Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Happy you're with us. Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Joel Karsten has worked in the green industry for many years. He is the author and inventor of the straw bale garden method. He's also an avid vegetable gardener. Welcome to the program, Joel.
Hey, great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for that and for being with us. And just to be a total transparency, Joel Karsten, he is the inventor and also Bell Buster. He is a sponsor of the program as well. So I don't want anybody to think, well, what's that about? We want to make that clear as well.
All right. So why don't you tell us about the straw bale garden method idea? Where did you come up with this idea?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, necessity is the mother of invention, right?
Right.
So many years ago, I graduated from college, and it's going on 34 years ago now, and I bought a house, a small house, and it turns out I have a degree in horticulture from college, and when I bought my house, I wanted to have a garden, obviously, a vegetable garden. So it turns out I only had less than an inch of topsoil at this new construction site. So underneath was all gravel and compacted clay, and on top was maybe an inch of topsoil. And normally a person would just build raised beds in that scenario. But I had a problem. I just graduated college, and I just bought a house, so I didn't have money to build raised beds. But I did grow up on a crop and dairy farm. And when growing up on the farm, we would have bales of straw or bales of hay where you get a broken twine, and you just set it against the barn, thinking you come back and get it later.
You never
did. But then we never did. That bale would get rained on and snowed on. And by the next summer, the great big tallest, healthiest, greenest thistles in the whole county were the ones that would grow out of these bales laying by the barn. And I would notice that even as a little kid. So now we fast forward. I buy this house. I don't have any money to build raised beds, but I did remember these bales. And I thought, you know, if it grows thistles or whatever out of these bales so well, it probably would grow tomatoes and peppers also. So I got some bales and I started doing some experimenting. And I started to develop this, it's kind of like a recipe, a real method for how to do this and have it be successful every time. It's kind of like making a sandwich. You know, if you use the same ingredients every time, you end up with the same flavor sandwich, kind of like Subway. And so that's what we do is we tell people to get a bale and then you've got to do the conditioning process on the bale. And then following the conditioning process, which is where it grows, colonizes bacteria inside, then you put your plants in. And if you just follow the step-by-step straw bale garden method, it's pretty much foolproof in most cases.
Now, in this learning how to grow in a straw bale, did your wife or your family, did it classify you as being crazy? Was they like, this is not going to work? You might as well just go do something different?
Yeah, a lot of people said that, Joey. A lot of people said that. So that's okay. You know, water runs off a duck's back.
Right.
I just kept doing it, and it worked for me. It worked really well. So I kept expanding and trying different things. And it took me 3, 4, 5 years probably to really kind of get the method that I wanted perfected. And then I wrote it down because I wanted to keep track of what I was doing. And then other people would say, hey, I'm going to try that. Tell me how you did it. So then I would show them how to do it, and eventually that led to my first little self-published booklet, and then that led to, you know, social media. That was way back when Facebook was just a baby, right? When Facebook first started in like 2005 or 6, we put a page on Facebook, and that spread to all kinds of information around the world. And then, of course, the publishers come, and they say, hey, you know, we see this little self-published booklet you got, but you need to write a real book about this. So I ended up writing a book with Cool Springs Press for Quarto Publishing in 2013. That was my first published book. It was just over 10 years ago. And since then, I've written 5 books now, and it's become a worldwide thing. At this point, Joey, we got more than 60 countries that we know of where people are growing in straw bales, and over 1 million people in North America that we know are doing straw bale gardening. So it's kind of become, while it's still a niche, you know, there's 38 million households, I think they estimate, that have gardens, right around 1 million in North America. So that would include Canada and parts of Mexico as well. We got a lot of gardeners. So, and you know, of the 38 million households in the United States that have backyard gardens. I would guess 700,000-800,000 straw bale gardens amongst those. So it's not a huge section yet. It's, you know, probably 1-2% of gardens, but slowly but surely we're converting people. People that try it love it, and they do more of it. So that's what we want to encourage.
Well, just think that if 15, 20, 30 years ago you would have went with the consensus, hey, this is crazy, you'll go do something else. The amount of people in even third world countries that are doing this now in a means that that's the only way that they can survive is grow food in a straw bale. The impact that you've had, not to gloat or, you know, point praise at you, but do you ever think about that?
Yeah, it's impactful. I mean, I know I get letters from people. It's crazy when people send me copies of their dad or their mom's obituary, and in their obituary it talks about how much they love straw bale gardening. I mean, that's pretty impactful. Yeah. If you can make it in the last 200, 300 words of someone's life, that means that it really meant something to them. And that happens more often than you'd think. I mean, that's happened many times already where I see that in people's obituaries. So it's a strange phenomenon, and I don't know exactly why it happens. But I speculate a little bit that it could be because straw bale gardening is very conspicuous. You know, if you put 10 straw bales in your yard and start watering them and fertilizing them, people take notice.
Right.
And, you know, you could have a regular, normal vegetable garden and nobody really pays much attention. But if you start watering straw bales, you're going to get lots of questions, and that creates curiosity, and that curiosity, you know, creates conversations and maybe new relationships with neighbors you've never met before. And they stop by and ask about your straw bale garden. What is this that you're doing? And then you explain it to them. And that's kind of that's one of the reasons why it spread so quickly, in my opinion, is because of that conspicuous nature. And just because it really is very simple to do, mm-hmm. You know, you prep the bales. It takes maybe 60 seconds a day for 10 days, and your bales are ready to plant. You plant them, and there's not a ton of maintenance. You got to water, you know, keep the bales moist, and that's about it. And then you start harvesting. So it eliminates weeding, which is a big thing, and you don't have to bend over as much. So that's people like that, you know. It holds moisture really well inside the bales, so. You know, there's a lot of things people really like about it, and that lends itself to our modern lifestyle. You know, people don't have time to spend tons and tons of time out weeding their garden. They like sort of a shortcut method. So this is like the hack for gardeners, you know, sort of the shortcut method to have a successful vegetable garden without all the work that normally comes with the vegetable garden.
And you've talked about it multiple times, the conditioning process, because I think probably you would agree one of the fails that most people think is, oh, I'll just put some plants in a straw bale, and that's the fail, and they think it doesn't work. Yeah. There's a process in which to get that internal portions of the bale to a material that the plants can feed off of and grow.
Yes. Oh, that's such an important thing. I'm so glad you mentioned that. Yeah, what we're really doing during the conditioning period is we're growing bacteria inside the bales, bacteria and fungi, and they very quickly will colonize the bales. Given the right conditions where they need some moisture and they need a source of food, which is normally a nitrogen source, you can do that organically or using traditional nitrogen. We make Bale Buster, our product, in both organic and traditional NPK type formulas. And you put that on, and that feeds the bacteria, and the bacteria colonize inside the bale. Then you'll be able to tell they're doing that because the bales get warm during that time. You can't see them because they're microscopic. You know, you need a microscope if you wanted to see those bacteria, but you can feel them inside the bale. And then once they colonize inside the bale, they'll start to metabolize the straw, and they literally break the stem and the leaf of that stalk of straw back down into the cells that it was created from. And then they break those cells back down into the molecules that created the cells. And then floating around in the water solution inside this bale are little ions and cations of molecules that you would recognize, like nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, molybdenum, zinc, calcium, iron, manganese, boron, all of the micro and macronutrients that all plants need to absorb through their roots in order to grow a new plant. So what's amazing is a tiny little molecule that was inside the leaf, let's say, of a wheat plant last year gets decomposed by bacteria, and that same molecule can end up inside a leaf of a tomato plant that we grow out of that bale the next year. So there's no new molecules created. All Mother Nature does is decomposes currently existing organic material, breaks it back into molecules that created that plant, and then allows those molecules to be absorbed again through the roots of another plant. So it's really amazing to see how it happens. And this is all, I know that your teacher covered this back in the third grade in your plant biology, but a lot of people have forgotten how the fundamentals of plant growth like that work. Of course, the energy is created through photosynthesis, but the cells that are created are created from these molecules that are absorbed by osmosis through the roots.
Fantastic. So some people, I know we've been asked this when we've given straw bale presentations, is a concern is pesticides being used on the bales or in the
wheat or the stubble.
Is there a way to know if it might be infiltrated with pesticides? Is that a high chance? How can people avoid that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that is a common question that I get. And I try to alleviate some fears there. A more concern would be hay than straw, because there's a category of herbicides that tend to linger. Those are aminorallids and clopyrallids. And those are typically, the label on the application for something like the common name is Grazon is a good one. And it'll say on that label that you should never use this on hay that's going to be baled and sold for any purpose. And the reason is because that herbicide will linger inside the hay. None of those are labeled for use on cereal grains. So they shouldn't be using clopyrallids or aminorallids on wheat and oats and barley and rice and some of the other sources that we get straw from. And if they did use like glyphosate for a dry down, to get the wheat or the oats to dry more quickly, that has a half-life of about 72 hours. So it's very volatile. And once it's sprayed on, it has its effect very quickly. And then after a week or 2 weeks, it's almost undetectable. And one of the great things we have in the bales is this bacteria. And when we colonize a bale with bacteria like that, it will consume, it will eat any hydrocarbon chains that are in that bale. And that's what herbicides are, is hydrocarbon chains. Some of which are harder to break down, like the aminorallids and clopyrallids. They will eventually break down completely. Bacteria will eat them. And what's funny is if you look up how to treat, like say you got a contaminated bale or something, you look up on the chemical manufacturer's information, how to rectify that, how to solve that problem. They'll tell you need to compost the organic material in order to get rid of this lingering herbicide. And that's exactly what we're doing, because what they're counting on is bacteria coming in and breaking down those hydrocarbon chains. And that's what happens inside of a bale anyway. So, in all my years of doing straw bale gardening, I've never run into that situation where a bale has had lingering herbicides in it. I have had many occasions where people have planted their straw bale gardens and then somebody next door sprays the lawn with Weed Be Gone, or they spray their own lawn and that drifts over and ends up killing plants in their garden just from the herbicide drift. But more so than on the bale. Now, if you didn't get a bale and you were concerned about something being in it, you could do what's called a seed germination assay test. And that's something people could just Google how to do it. And there's real specific instructions for how to do it. Essentially, it means doing like you did in the second grade, where you fill little cups with potting mix and then you put some seeds in there. And we're going to use seeds like of tomatoes, peas, and beans, or carrots is another really good one. And then you mix some of your straw. You take a couple handfuls of straw and chop that up and mix that in three other cups, and you plant the same seeds. And then you compare how many germinate in the plain potting mix versus the potting mix with the straw. And if you don't get any difference in germination, then there's no – in all three of those seeds, then there's no herbicide that could be present, because germinating seeds of – particularly of sensitive plants like peas and – tomatoes and carrots and beans, those will show very quickly if there's any contamination. So it's kind of a a homeowner's way to DIY checking to see if there's any contamination. You can do this for your soil in your garden or for your straw in your straw bale too.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things in which one can grow in a straw bale, but what are some things that you wouldn't advise growing in a straw bale? That list is a lot smaller.
Yeah, I don't advise people to do corn. You know, people like to grow sweet corn, but shoot, you can only get maybe three stalks of corn out of a bale, so it's not very productive. It's hard, you know, the roots are really big, and it's hard to keep it upright. So I don't advise that. And then perennial stuff like rhubarb and asparagus that comes back year after year, really, you shouldn't even harvest those for 3 years after you plant them. So I always tell people probably that's not a good idea for your straw bales. The other thing I haven't had great luck with, honestly, is onions. Haven't done very well for me. Now, down south, they love their onions in the straw bales. I get reports back that they love them in Texas and Oklahoma and such. But I don't do very well with those here in Minnesota. The other thing that doesn't seem to do well is rosemary. Doesn't grow very well in the bales. Other than that, pretty much everything. You'll love tomatoes out of bales. They do really well, as does squash and cucumbers and peppers. And another star for me has always been eggplants. Mm. They do really well.
Well, that bale holds that moisture that plant needs, such as for your watermelons, your squashes, your cantaloupes, that type of thing. So you're not having to water consistently on those hot summer days.
Yeah. I still encourage people to make sure they're watering, right. But you just don't have to water at such volume.
Right.
You can water a small amount, a small dose, but then do it more frequently. I'll tell you that one of the saving graces for vegetable gardeners are these little hose end timers that you can buy that you can put on your soaker hose or your drip system, and you just program it like your alarm clock. I got a new one last summer because mine went kaput, and mine's got, it hooks up to my phone, so it's all Wi-Fi. I can program on there, you know, how long I want each different zone to turn on for. Just makes watering so simple. Then I can water more often, but in real low doses, and that really is helpful for a vegetable garden. Otherwise, things get overwatered. Whenever you overwater a bale, for instance, a lot of that water will run through the bale, and then it carries with it any soluble nutrients in that bale. So you can actually flush nitrogen right out of the bale if you're not careful. So I encourage people just a small dose and then do it more frequently. So when you get to midsummer, you know, where you got a great big tomato plant growing out of that bale, and you got 100 tomatoes up on that plant that you're trying to feed, you're trying to juice those tomatoes, it's going to use a lot of water. So maybe three times a day, but every time you water, it's only, you know, on that bale is maybe 3 minutes or 4 minutes. So it just gets a gallon of water on each bale, and that's enough. And then, but maybe it's going off three times a day, you know, once early in the morning and once midday and once in the early afternoon. And just don't water late in the day. That's what I always tell people. If you can avoid watering, get at least 3 hours of sunlight on your garden before sunset. You know, you want to make sure that garden is dry going into the sunset. That's really important because it will help stop bacterial and fungal growth on your leaves. Wet leaves in a vegetable garden will spread disease. So you want to try to keep those leaves as dry as possible, as much as possible.
That's a great reminder, Joel. So we've really enjoyed having you on the program again. How can people find out more, you know, your website, and then obviously they can pick up a book or...
And Bale Buster.
And Bale Buster as well.
Yeah, we're all over online, but the best place to come is to strawbalegardenclub.com. It's really sort of the headquarters now for all things straw bale gardening. You don't have to be a member to come to our site. You can, if you do come, you can join for free. We just ask for people to sign up so that we keep spammers off of our website. We have a free forum there where people can ask questions, and then we get answers back to them real quickly. We have almost 100 videos now on our website, a major blog there people can read. So there's a lot of resources and a lot of information. And, of course, they can buy Bale Buster there as well. Bale Buster is available all over now. It's on Amazon. It's on Walmart.com. So people can find it in lots of places. So if you're doing a straw bale garden, give Bale Buster a try on at least four of your bales. We sell Bale Buster 4, which is made, it's packaged just specifically for four bales. We have all different sizes, But that's a good sort of a starter size for people to try out.
Well, Joel, we greatly appreciate your time, your invention of the Straw Belt Garden Method, and the information you've shared not only with Holly and myself, but all of our listeners. We thank you for that.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.